Good morning and welcome back to Nachyami. Today we're going to be focusing on Yirmiyahu Perek Zayin, the 7th chapter of Sefer Yirmiyahu. This Perek takes place in the earlier years of the reign of the king of Jehoiakim. So let's just sort of contextualize ourselves historically and then get a sense of what Yirmiyahu is doing, because it's pretty dramatic. Here we go. So Jehoiakim is actually the son of Yoshiyahu HaMelech. Yoshiyahu, of course, was this incredible reformer, incredibly righteous king. Braille brought about a movement of change, of tshuva. He destroyed the Avodah Zarah. At the same time, he was too confident in the people and was killed when Pharaoh, Paro Nechoi, the crippled Pharaoh, was trying to move through the land of Israel to assist Assyria in their coalition against the rising power of Babel. So what happens is Yoshiyahu HaMelech is killed and his son Jehoiachaz is placed in his stead. In the meantime, Egypt carries on to its north conquest and fights alongside Assyria, managing to create a stronghold, but at the same time not vanquishing Babel. And this is when they set up Karkarmish, and they establish the borderline, and Egypt starts becoming more of a power in the southern regions as it is the stabilizing agent in this area against the Babylonian onslaught. So while this is happening, three months after the killing of Yoshiyahu, Pharaoh Necho looks down to the south and notices that the person on the throne, Jehoahaz, who has been put in this, on the throne by the people, is in fact not going to be a loyal king to him. He's more like his father, who has anti-Assyrian, anti-Egyptian leanings. And therefore he takes Jehoahaz into captivity and places rather the firstborn son of Yoshiyahu, whose name is Eliakim, onto the throne, and he changes his name to Jehoiakim. That's the name he's going to be known as from then onwards. Jehoiakim is going to be somebody that Pharaoh can deal with, which means that he's going to be politically in homage to Egypt. And that's what happens. So the policy that Jehoiakim adopts, is that he's going to now pay subservience to Pharaoh. He pays extremely high taxes to Egypt. As part of his coalition, Egypt affords him security and protection. Whereas at the same time, Jehoiakim now reestablishes and keeps the strength of the Mikdash. So there's an irony over here. On the one hand, there's political subservience to Egypt and Assyria ultimately, whereas there is religious alignment with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's almost like the insurance policy that we'll keep the Mikdash because it's a stabilizing agent in spiritually for the people and for the morale of the people, even though that's not necessarily where we were putting our trust in our foreign policy and security. So it's into this context that now we really get a sense of this Perek Zion. And here's how it goes. Hadavar asher yo el Yirmiyahu meis Hashem nemor. This is the words that Hashem said to Yirmiyahu, saying, Amoid b'sha'ar beis Hashem, v'karas Hashem es hadavar hazeh, v'amart Hashimu dvar Hashem kol Yehuda. So Yirmiyahu now gives this prophecy in the gate of Hashem. This means to say he is in the gate leading to the Beis HaMikdash, and this is where he presents his prophecy during the times of Jehoiakim. We should be aware, as we carry on learning through this parak, what the reaction of the people would be like when they hear these words. So here's what he says. He calls out to everybody and he starts off optimistically. You know, Hashem says, please, Heitivu Darcheichem, make better your ways. Don't trust in those false sayers. The only thing that can really help you over here is to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu and create justice in society. Two of the themes we've seen a lot of in Yirmiyahu as well. And he says, Hinei atem boitchim lochem al divrei hasheker levilti ha'il. You're trusting in these false hopes that are not going to help you. You have somebody who steals, murders, adulterates, swears falsely in the name of Hashem, sacrifices to Baal, and goes after all these other foreign deities. And then you come to my house, says God, where my name is planted in it. Save us, Hashem, from our enemies, so we could still continue to perpetuate the terrible things, the embarrassments that we have been doing, the disgraces that we've been doing. You hear the tone of Yirmiyahu here? What a powerful statement. What are you doing here? He's saying, how would Hashem even want to listen to you? And then he carries on, Ki lechuno el makomi asher b'shiloi asher shikanti shmi shom. Go to Shiloh, where I originally had my Mishkan, and go and see Uru'u es asher osisi lo, what I did to it, b'mnei ro'as ami Yisrael. And look what I did to it. Look how I destroyed Shiloh. What happened to Shiloh? So the Radak points out that when the Mishkan was in Shiloh for really the amount of time, for 369 odd years, and it came about its destruction in the war against the Philistines under the Shofet Eli, who was also the Kohen Gadol. And what happened was is that the people were losing in battle. They decided, let's bring out the Aron. They bring the Aron out, and in fact, the Aron is taken captive, and the Mishkan is destroyed. And says Yirmiyahu, understand what the mistake was then. They believed that if they had the oracle, if they had the Aron, and they had this religious, you know, item, that would save them, because there's no way the Aron could fall. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, it's not about the Aron. It really doesn't make so much of a difference. Because if your actions are empty, if your society is corrupt inwardly, it doesn't make a difference if you're in the Beis Hashem or not, because it's not going to help you. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying over here, through the voice of Yirmiyahu. Very, very powerful statement. And then he actually goes so far as to say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Yirmiyahu, this is an interjection in the middle, where Hashem turns to Yirmiyahu and says, Va'ata, al tispalel ba'adam azeh. Don't pray on behalf of these people. I'm not listening to you anymore. Don't intercede on their behalf. And as the Malbim points out, that the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs to say that shows us that ribui tefillah, increasing tefillah, even about something which is should be clearly obvious that it's not appropriate, actually does have an impact. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Yirmiyahu, please stop. Right, similar to Moshe Rabbeinu, when Moshe Rabbeinu was pleading for something he desperately needed, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, no more. Similarly over here, Yirmiyahu is being told, don't pray for these people because they're not deserving of it. In the next little section of this perek, from Chof Aleph to Chof Ches, Yirmiyahu now talks about how the importance of what Hashem values is hearts, but not sacrifices. Again, coming back to the first section in this perek, where he says that your service is corrupt and unwanted. Here's what he says. Look, you keep on adding your burnt offerings, your sacrifices. I wasn't interested in sacrifices on the day that you left Egypt when I redeemed you and made you my nation. There's only one thing I commanded you. Shimu b'koli v'yisi lochem l'elokim. Listen to my word, and I'll be to you a God, and you'll be my people. If you listen to the way that I've chosen for you, then you'll walk with me eternally. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, as in any good relationship, it doesn't make a difference how nice the anniversary gift is. If there's no feeling, if there's no turning towards, if there's no listening, if there's no empathy, it doesn't make a difference how nice that gift is. It's meaningless. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I don't need your sacrifices. It's interesting that actually commenting on this section, just to this general theme, in the introduction to the Koren Sacks Siddur, the Grey Siddur, Rabbi Jonathan Sacks has a beautiful introduction, which is very worthwhile reading. And he says the following, just a quotation of what he points out. And I think it's such a very, very, very subtle but powerful point. He says, the transition from sacrifice to prayer was not a sudden development. 1,000 years earlier, in the speech of the decoration of the temple, Shlomo Melech had emphasized prayer rather than sacrifice. Yeshayahu Hashem said, my house is a house of tefillah, for ki besi beis tefillah l'chol amim. Hashem said, take with you words, kochi mochem dvarim, v'shuv al Hashem. And he goes on and he quotes all the prophets. He says, therefore, though the outer act was no longer possible, the inner act remained. That is how sacrifice turned into prayer. What's being said over here is that tefillah isn't this, sorry second-rate option when korbanos are not available. No, that's what ultimately, it's the heart, it's the belief, it's the system of thought and dedication, which is what tefillah is, which is what should have been behind the korbanos. When that ritual disappeared, what should have remained is the inner core, which is what tefillah is. A beautiful way of looking at the transition from korbanos to sacrifices to tefillah. Finally, Yirmiyahu concludes this by saying, in a very sad way, is that because you did betray Hashem in all these places, and you brought all these foreign services, right? Uvonu vamos atofes. You built the bomb, this altar of Tofes, Hashem begebe inhum, in Gebe inhum. We have archaeological ruins about this. Lisrofes benemes by benosehem, by esha shelot sivisi, v'loi also alibi. And you wanted to burn your children in this Assyrian practice of child sacrifice. So Hashem says, you know what? Therefore, days are going to come. And it's going to not be called the Gay Ben Hinnom. It's going to be called the Valley of Massacre. And v'hoysa nivlas ha'omazeh lema'achal v'lo'if ha'shamayim v'lema'as ha'aretz. And your bodies are going to be strewn across those valleys where you sacrifice to these false gods. V'ishpati me'or Yehuda me'ayu mechutzas Yerushalayim. And I'm going to cease... I'm going to make quiet from the hills of Yehuda and the chutzos Yerushalayim and the courtyards of Yerushalayim. Kol sason v'kol simcha, kol chason v'kol kala. There's not going to be the sound of rejoicing of weddings anymore. Ki yelo chorvati yelo aretz. And as the Malbim points out, even after the most terrible battles, when society reconstitutes itself, you know, the widows and the widowers and the lost people all band together to recreate what's left. He says, you know, says it's not gonna, not even that's not gonna exist. That's how destruction, how much destruction is gonna be. This obviously paves the pathway to the more famous statement of Yirmiyahu is Odi Yishama Ba'ari Yehuda V'chutzos Yerushalayim, which obviously is a play on this prophecy of doom. One last thing, just to think about in this parak as a whole, and that is how do you think this was received? Yirmiyahu is standing in the base of Mikdash, or the courtyard in there. Entrance to the Beis HaMikdash, how was this received? So we're going to see, we're not going to focus on it now, but ultimately, Yoyakim was not fond of people who disapproved of his policies internally and externally. And in fact, he killed other prophets. Uriah, who was killed for this, we're going to see a little bit later. And when we go into Perek Chavov, we'll see that in fact, at this point in time, Yirmiyahu is placed on a trial right there by the officers of Yoyakim in the front of the temple. And there is he is almost killed because of this prophecy. Or what happens? We'll get there, Mes Hashem, when we get to Perek Chof Vav. Sometimes it takes a lot to be able to say the truth. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.